Alex, I believe I have reached the equivalent of nirvana.
Tell me more.
Well, I have been sleeping on my cozy earth sheets.
Wow.
And when I get up in the morning, I put on my fantastic jogger suit.
Yes.
Which is a funny way to put it, but you started saying that, so I'm just going to keep on going. And it is opening my mind to things I didn't know I could open my mind to.
Casey, all I have to say is, welcome to the other side.
It's incredible, Alex.
I've lived two lives. One of them is before Cozy Earth, and one is after.
Which is right now.
That's right. We're talking Cozy Earth. They make incredible, soft, lovely, temperature-controlled bedding and cozy wear.
Cozy Earth makes the best clothes I think I've ever touched, that have ever touched my skin.
Casey, I'm right there with you.
It's soft, it's breathable, it's temperature regulated, it looks good, it feels good, which makes it good.
And how about this for good? All of their products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. So if for some completely batshit reason you don't love these sheets, you can return them.
Now, Alex, right around the corner is Mother's Day. If you haven't already done something, which you should have,
yeah,
now's your moment. Go buy your mom some Cozy Earth, because it is the thing that will help her sleep at night. It's the thing that will help keep her comfortable at all moments of her life. And that's what you want for your mom.
So she isn't up all night thinking about what a disappointment her children are.
Exactly, because they didn't get her Cozy Earth. You don't want to be on that level.
Well, Casey, here's some exciting news. All Completely Arbitrary listeners get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. Again, that's promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, for 35% off at Cozy Earth. So get yourself cozy. Get your mom cozy. Hell, get your dad cozy and your friends cozy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to stop there, you know?
Make the earth cozy with Cozy Earth.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I am one of your hosts, and my name is Alex Croson, and I am alongside, as always, Mr. Casey Clapp.
That's me. Good morning. I never want to say good morning in case someone's listening to this at night.
Oh, sure.
It makes me afraid that I'm going to make them feel out of place.
Oh, that's considerate.
Yeah, but you know what? You're in the right place.
How about this?
In the right time.
Good day.
I usually do that, but I always like saying, good day. I don't know.
You usually say good day to you.
Yeah, exactly. Usually it's an offensive goodbye.
And a little voice.
Yeah.
Hi, Case.
Hi, Alex. How you doing?
Doing all right. You came over this morning.
Yes.
And you are leaving for a couple weeks here. By the time comes out, you'll be back.
Actually, yeah, that's fun, isn't it? For like several weeks at this point.
And you are something people may not know as far as the structure of our business. You are in charge of shipping.
Yes, that's right.
All the merch and the Cone of the Month Club stuff. So you're leaving for a couple weeks. You brought over all of the merch that I will need to ship. You gave me a refresher and a rundown of everything you've learned about our shipping, our label printer,
yep,
and our and
complex,
how to, yes,
machinations.
Yeah, for anyone who has never shipped anything like professionally, oh my God, is it a fucking deal?
Don't do it. Just don't start.
But I feel very grateful that you have spent so much time doing this that you have like a great workflow and you were able to able to show me really efficiently how to do it.
Well, I try. I was honestly just trying to figure out how things go faster. I don't like doing things like pointlessly slowly.
Yeah.
Sometimes people are like, well, that sometimes you got to do it slow. Mm-mm. Just to figure it out. But no, I like to do it, get it done, figure out the fastest, most efficient way to do it, but do it right and well. I also don't like people who just do things. It's not that I don't like them. My method is like, if you do it too fast and it's sloppily done, you didn't do it. It wasn't correct. You got to do it right.
And that will inevitably take more time because you'll goof up and you'll got to go back and fix stuff. And
that's exactly right.
It adds more work.
There you go. So that's the true lesson that we've learned here is that you should work slow and hard, but not smart.
No. Yes. Wait.
Shoot.
You should work
smart at the right pace so you don't work hard.
Don't work.
Don't work is what we're saying. That's right. Alex, I'm happy for you to be taking over this for the next couple weeks. I appreciate it. So does everyone who's buying all of our cool stuff.
Yeah.
We just got done with our pop-up sale, or we just are in the midst of it. So by the time you hear this, of course, you will have had the chance to buy a bunch of cool cones.
Yeah.
Now, remember, if you want to get those right off the bat and not have to worry about being able to get in that pop-up sale or not, you just got to jump on that wagon, get in the Cone of the Month Club on Patreon.com.
I'll say this about the Cone of the Month Club.
Go for it.
We're kind of wrapping up the year here.
Yeah.
We had such a good time making this Patreon. We only started this in February. It's been a lot of fun to deal with all these artists and the sticker people we use locally here in Portland. If you can afford $10 a month for some fun, just pleasurable activity, I honestly think that the Cone of the Month Club is like a pretty good deal. And I'm not saying that because I run it. I'm saying that because I object, from totally non-biased opinion. I think the Cone of the Month Club is pretty sick.
I think it's great, and I've not seen many other Patreons that offer like a physical thing that comes out. Usually, like extra episodes, like advanced this or that. And I'm like, well, it's nice to support it, but I'll just wait a week before I get that new episode that drops out.
Sure.
In this case, you get two episodes, which is, you know, pretty standard. You should always get a little more content.
Mm-hmm.
But man, oftentimes you don't get an actual, like, physically sent over thing.
Yeah.
Exciting.
It is exciting. And Casey, you know what else is exciting?
Cones. Real cones.
Real cones. You fucked up my transition. Meyer Lemons.
Yes, it is. Alex, I have a confession.
Uh-oh.
I love fucking up your transitions.
Well, yeah. You know what? My transitions are your transitions. You're my co-host, motherfucker.
I know, but every time you just get there, and then I just switch directions really fast.
That's so antagonistic.
No,
why?
It's not, because it's fun. It's fun to make us always stay on our toes, you know?
You know, helping me is helping you.
Exactly.
I'll say that.
Hey, and helping
you
is helping
me. No, not exactly. It's the
me.
Opposite of what you're doing.
No, it's not. It's perfect. Alex, I think this is making us both grow as a podcast.
I think we should finally have that big fight that's been boiling under the skin for a full year.
There's some like psychologist who's just been like, I can see it. It's right there.
Yeah.
We're just waiting for it. Well, guess what? Not today.
Today, we are talking about a tree as we do every episode, and this week's tree is the Meyer Lemon tree. Casey, I love the scientific name for the Meyer Lemon.
Yes.
Citrus X Meyeri.
Yeah, isn't that kind of fun? It obviously feels like an X-Men, like some kind of, what are they? They're mutants.
Yeah.
Yeah, it almost fits a little bit. It really does.
I'm interested to hear more about that. And Casey, it also reminds me of like two artists collaborating. They always put an X in the middle.
Oh, that's right. Yes. It's like a mashup.
This is a mashup between Citrus and Meyer.
Yes, that's fantastic.
Casey, let's imagine, as we do every episode,
yes,
that you and I are walking through a lemon grove. How about that?
Gorgeous.
And we are stunned in this. I'm assuming it smells really good.
It does, actually.
Casey, let's ID this tree.
Oh, Alex, it is the tiniest tree we've done.
Really?
Period. To the extent that someone might be like, that's not a tree.
Wow.
It's really just kind of a big shrub.
Are you kidding?
But it's usually single-stemmed, and even in one of the books that I have pulled a lot of this information from that we're going to be talking about today, it is a tree. It's shown as a tree. It's single-stem. It's a little tiny little thing. It's adorable, and I think that it counts. I'm counting this as a tree, even though it does not meet the requirements.
Wow.
It doesn't do it.
But see, it is really short.
It's really short. I have things in here saying it's actually like maybe up to, 10 feet tall is what
wow.
it says. So it's like, wait, okay, hold on. Only 10 feet tall, yet it counts? And I'm like, yes.
It's that single stem, right?
It's the single stem. I know. So it's a single stem. It's a small tree. It's kind of like, okay, is a bonsai tree a tree? It doesn't meet those requirements. It just looks like one in miniature, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, where are we gonna draw a line here? And because lines are, you know, better left undrawn, I'm going to call this a tree. And I'll explain why. Look at this photo. See?
Yeah, Casey's showing me a photo of a lemon tree. Well, it's an illustration.
Yeah.
It's a photo of an illustration.
Exactly.
It's not a photo of an illustration.
It's just an illustration. Which is by Thibaud Harum.
Yeah, and it is... The way it's drawn on the page makes it look small.
It does.
It takes up about a quarter of the page.
Exactly. So it looks small, but it also looks like a tree.
It does look like a tree.
So that's what we're going to go with.
It looks a little bit Japanese maple-y.
It kind of does, yeah, because they're like, you know, Japanese maple, small trees. So when you're looking at a little lemon tree or a big lemon shrub, it will have a single stem that comes up and kind of has multiple new branches comes off and creates a little small globe of a canopy. Kind of like take a cumulus cloud and stick it on a couple branches and pop it there.
Cool.
Turn it green though, evergreen specifically, because these are tropical trees.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're native, funny enough, and this is going to come back in a second, just we're going to say Southeast Asia. We're going to start there as a broad area.
Okay.
They have evergreen leaves. A lot of them have little thorns that come out.
Hmm.
The leaves, in fact, lime leaves are very commonly used to make like... curries and things like that.
That's right.
So those are like the really bright, like bright lime green. The color lime green really is like, it's not the color of the fruit. It's more the color of the actual leaves themselves.
Yeah. These are really straight up dead ass simple leaves, Case.
Yeah. It's the easiest way to do it. Yeah. Simple. They're alternate on the thing. They're very waxy. They're fragrant if you break into them.
Do they smell like lemon?
They do. Yeah. They smell a little bit like lemon. At least they have like a little kind of citrusiness to them.
Yeah.
Which is fun because also, do you know what else smells like citrusy?
Oh, cedar.
Yes, exactly, Alex. Yeah. And do you know what's curious about that?
What?
The name citrus, which is the genus name for this, actually comes from the same term.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that wild?
That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, so it's they assume that that it was called that in like citrone. If you take cedar and you change it from a C sound to a K sound, keter, that like has the same root as lemon. Or rather, I'm sorry, is citrus.
That's amazing.
Isn't that funny? Yeah, so they're these little tiny adorable things. And then, of course, their flowers are these fragrant little white things. But they come out from, if you look up really quickly, like a flower of a citrus plant.
Got it right here.
Look at the buds. There usually is like a little bud next to it.
It's like a little pink bud.
Exactly. It's like this gorgeous little like magenta colored bud or like group of buds that come out.
Yeah.
And the stems also, I should note, are completely green. So the stems are green, the leaves are green, and then these flowers just pop out in these bright magenta colors with like white as they come out and open up. Gorgeous.
Wow. You know what? This whole color scheme is really working for me.
You like it? Yeah.
The green of the leaves, the white of the flowers, the yellow of the pistil or stamen.
Yeah, what are the flower parts? I guess it's a little close to. I'm not seeing your photo.
And then the pink of the kind of blush pink of the bud, and then the bright yellow of the lemon. My God.
Yeah, it's really nice.
It's a good looking tree.
Yeah, the outside, those little bits on the outside, those are the stamen putting out the pollen.
Mm-hmm.
And then right in the very middle, that is the style and the anter, and that is what's actually taking in all of the all the pollen, which then, of course, goes down into the ovary, creates a seed. The seed then starts to mature, and once it matures, the rest of that little fruit starts to mature, and guess what you get? You get a lemon.
Oh, right.
Bow, bow, bow. I was I tossed it up to you.
I knew.
Yeah,
oh,
you did.
Oh, it's not fun having somebody not alley-oop, huh?
Oh, and it comes back. This podcast is over.
It's not fun setting something up and having it knocked down.
Well, at least I knock it in a different direction,
oh my
Alex.
God.
You know what? We are fighting.
Oh, my God. We're
this
fighting.
This color sucks. All right. I apologize. I will give in to you.
I didn't even do it on purpose. I said, as in,
purpose.
It was a knowing, a lemon, of course, Casey.
Sorry.
This thing grows lemons.
It does. I learned my lesson.
I'm blushing.
Me too.
Casey and I are so afraid of conflict.
Anywho, you're right. It's a lemon. It is a lemon. It is more specifically a really fun term, and this is I'm super excited for this.
Wow!
It is what they call a Hesperidium or a Hesperidia.
Hesperidium.
Yeah, Hesperidia.
Okay.
Yeah. So Hesperidium. There's an I-U-M at the end.
Hesperidium.
Yes, Hesperidium.
Hesperidium.
Yeah, oh, Hesperidium.
This is unlistenable.
Yeah, it is. Everyone's going to be like, is this on repeat? Is this skipping?
Nope.
It isn't.
You're not listening on a disc, man.
So here's what's funny about it. It is technically a very modified berry. And
wow.
This is fun because it came up a while back. We were talking about what exactly a berry is. What was it that we had discussed that was, in fact, a berry?
A tomato.
But we also had another one of our trees.
Oh.
Jeez, which tree was it, I ask you? Pomegranate. That was it, wasn't it?
A pomegranate's a berry?
Pomegranate is a berry.
Okay.
So the pomegranate, as a berry, is it has all the fleshy bits on the inside, and then the seeds just kind of dispersed within that area.
Mm-hmm.
So same thing for the... Hesperidium. The difference being that the Hesperidium, instead of being a berry where you would normally like eat the outside, of course, the pomegranate being a notable exception still, the Hesperidium has a really thick rind where the different, there's the exocarp, which is the outside, the mesocarp and the endocarp. That's like the three layers on the skin of the berry. Those are really, really huge and thick, which of course we just call the peel of the orange or the peel of the lemon or the rind and all that, right?
And the flesh.
Yeah. And the inside, like those little slivers of fruit that we actually eat, those interestingly are these like modified vesicles. And you know, if you have an orange, vesicles are just tubes that grow inside plants.
Okay.
So you know, if you have an orange and you rip that open, you like open the orange very gingerly and you get one of those little slices.
Oh, yeah.
And then you take the skin off of it.
Oh, yeah.
And you look inside and you just see all these like really closely little like tubes of juice.
Can I tell you something about that?
Yeah.
When I was a kid,
uh-huh,
and we learned about cells, that everything's made of cells.
Yeah.
I thought that those little pulps, those little vesicles.
Each one
was a cell.
Oh my God.
And I was amazed because I was like, I thought they were supposed to be really tiny. I can see them. Yeah, because they look like little cells.
They totally do. And that's honestly probably a really good way to visualize it for a kid. Except you want to be like, well, these are also made up of many different cells. But
yeah.
Honestly, I think that's a, I bet you are not alone in that.
I was
like,
dumb.
100%. No, you certainly were not.
Still am.
Anyway. What's fun about those is that they're actually modified hairs. Those are hair cells.
Why?
They then get fill up with juices.
I don't love that.
I knew you wouldn't.
This is a wasp in the fig situation.
It totally
that sucks.
Is. Yeah.
That sucks.
But they're different kinds of. They're not they're not exactly hairs.
I mean,
you don't eat an orange or a lime or a lemon and just be like, oh God, I feel like I just have like all this in my mouth.
Right.
You know what I mean? They're called cilia, which is a it's like the technical term. You know, like we were looking at a magnolia.
Yep,
the other day.
I was just gonna say like the on the bottom of a magnolia.
Yes. Exactly. Okay. So they're just these little tiny, like tiny little growths that come out. It just so happens these growths on the inside got big and filled with juice.
Wow.
Yeah. So that is the little juicy bit. They're technically these little like hair bits.
All right. I don't think you could ruin citrus for me. I love
good.
It too much.
I don't want you to, because I think they are delicious. And we're coming up on when they really start good over down in the Florida.
Boy, oh boy, am I excited for citrus season.
Oh my gosh, so good. But you know what is really interesting about this?
What?
Is that citrus season anywhere is all the time. So I don't know why they are specifically good in Florida. I have an idea, though.
Okay.
So, you know how you have limes that are green, lemons that are yellow, oranges that are the color orange, mm-hmm. right? Okay. So, what if I told you that lemons actually would remain green all the time unless there was a little bit of a cold temperature and then they change colors?
Interesting.
That is a real thing, which is just so fascinating to me, and I had no idea, and I was very, very curious why this happens. It turns out, as I was saying to you earlier, when kind of was like, here's what we're going to talk about,
mm-hmm.
The lemon tree, the Meyer lemon, that X in there, that means that it's a hybrid.
Right.
So it is actually a hybrid from a bunch of other different kinds of citrus, specifically three species. That's it. Three different species that all interbred and then were made into hybrids. Then those hybrids were then crossed with other normal species again, and then they slowly became this really wild, like, triangle of these three species, and then all the different varieties, how they've been intergressed and crossed and then recrossed, so that everything's a hybrid. Nobody knows where the very first citrus fruit, lemon, came from.
It's like a messy thruple situation.
It is, yeah. Quickly, go into our show notes. I have to show you something.
All right.
So, this will hopefully be posted, or, of course, if you go to the Wikipedia page, which is where I found this, it is great. Now, the second paragraph, click here.
One moment. Meyer lemon.
Yeah, there you go.
The second paragraph, click here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Does that show you a really cool triangle?
I see a triangle called the hybridization in citrus cultivars.
Exactly.
Wow, I nailed that.
Yeah, well done. So if you look at that really closely, you can see on the very top of that triangle is C. reticulata.
True mandarins.
And then on the bottom left is the pomela, which is C. maxima.
Wow.
Bottom right is Cedrus medica or medica.
Citrons.
Exactly. Citrone is how I've been pronouncing it.
Citrones.
I don't know if that's right or not.
Okay.
And
oh my
then,
God.
Look in the middle, Alex.
So, okay.
We're going to try to post this, by the way, so everyone, you can see what we're talking about.
Let me try to describe it.
Please.
So, imagine like a character creation screen in an RPG, and there's a triangle, and like on the top, it's like muscular, and then on the bottom left, it's like short, right? And on the bottom right, it's like feminine or masculine, and you get to put your little dot where you want it.
Yeah.
And choose like the perfect hybrid of these three traits.
Exactly. You can move it, be really this or really that. But
yeah.
Then if you do that, then you're less one thing and less the other thing, you know?
Yeah. So
if you're right in the middle of that triangle, correct me, Alex, then that's like the exact average of all those
things.
The
Vitruvian man.
It's the Vitruvian lemon.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, halfway between pomelos and true mandarins here is a grapefruit, or a little closer to pomelo.
Yeah.
Which makes sense when I think about it.
Yeah, right?
Lemons exist somewhere between true mandarin and citrons, and then a little to the left.
Yeah, and citrons are like these really wacky, like super, really super thick rind lemons where they turn yellow, but they have like this really thick kind of warty looking outside.
This is actually fascinating.
Isn't it great?
Please look at this. We'll put it on the Instagram post for this episode.
Yeah. And so
amazing.
I was like, this is stunning. And it shows like there's the Meyer lemon almost right in the middle. The normal lemon, I say normal, just the non-Meyer lemon, is right next to it. And then there is, as you go up towards the true mandarins, there's like a bunch of wacky, like it looks like there's six or seven different species or kinds. You go a little bit away from the true mandarins towards the pomelos and you get a clementine.
Wow.
Sweet oranges are right between the pomelos and the true mandarins. And it's like this wacky thing. So all these hybrids have been going on for thousands of years, Alex. So when I was like, this isn't even a tree. Oh no, we can't do this. I was like, hold on. I think we actually can, because this is just a hybrid intermixed with something else to the point where there's no real, they're all kind of the same thing. So when you describe a lemon, all you're doing is talking about some cultivated variety of lemons. Maybe it's a hybrid, maybe it's not, that has been cultivated for a long time. The one that is the Myers lemon was a cultivar initially done in China, most likely, and then it just grew well there, and it had these little tiny fruits that have really thin skin and are really juicy. They're a little bit sweeter than the other lime or other lemons that would be citrus limon.
Wow.
And because there's a little bit of a temperature change in this area of China, they go from green to lemon. You go down to Ecuador, and they don't have any changes in temperatures. You grow a lime there, or in Mexico, just about anywhere, and they just say, oh, it's a limon. And you're like, oh, this is does not look like a lemon, but I'm pretty sure that's what limon means if you're saying it in Spanish.
Yeah.
And you look at it, it's just a green thing. You open it up and you bite into it. It's clearly a super sour, awful lemon.
Interesting.
But it's just because it doesn't change color. So depending on where you are, depending on what you have, depending on if you've grown it a certain cultivar or a certain hybrid or a certain back thing, you can have a Meyer lemon, or you can have a Citrone, or you can have a sweet orange, and all these other things. They are boiled down from these three different trees, the Citrone, the Pomelo, and the true Mandarin.
That's wacky and kind of mind-blowing.
Kind of mind-blowing, yeah.
Casey, we have so much more to say about
we do.
The Meyer lemon. But we're going to have to say it after the break. We'll be right back. More Completely Arbitrary coming at you. Casey, you know our future's bright.
Yeah, it is, Alex.
But it's so bright, we got to wear shades.
What?
Casey and I are now putting on our gooder glasses.
Oh, man. I can't see a damn thing.
Hey, they do the job, huh?
These things are great.
Casey, that's right. This episode is brought to you by Gooder.
That sure is right.
That is G-O-O-D-R. They make fashionable sunnies.
They make fantastic sunglasses. Alex, I got a quick story. When they approached us, I said, I cannot tell you how excited I am about this. They saved me when I was riding my bike across Iowa in Ragbri last July.
Wow.
I couldn't see. I got hit in the eye. So one of my eyes from a week prior would not constrict. It was constantly dilated.
Oh my God.
So I had to wait till it like essentially refixed itself. I ended up needing to wear sunglasses on the entire drive and driving back over, but I had cheap gas station sunglasses.
Yeah.
It was $5 or something.
Yeah.
And they just did not do the job. I was absolutely in hell. And then stopped over at a shop that was there and then picked up a pair of sunglasses and it said it was $25. And I was like, what? These are okay. I'll try them out. I just need a new pair.
Yeah.
All polarized. I put them on my face and it was like the world had changed.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure I cried, Alex.
Casey,
like, I love these sunglasses.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. They saved me.
That's amazing, Casey. And they didn't save me yet.
The time will come.
The day will come when I need these glasses and I have them. I do love these sunglasses, Casey. And I was telling you before we started recording, my problem with sunglasses is that I always either buy, like you said, a cheap gas station pair for $6, or I could debase myself by spending $200 on a pair of sunglasses at Nordstrom or some shit. I ain't doing that. Casey, Gooder are the perfect middle ground.
They sure are. Starting at $25, they're all 100% polarized. You can look into water and see through it.
Oh my God.
Which is incredible.
Is that true?
It is. They're polarized.
Yeah. Oh, well, these would be great for fishing, eh?
Exactly.
And they would be great for cycling, working out, golfing, going to the beach, hiking, or just walking around town.
Just doing anything. I rode my bike across Iowa with these sunglasses. People wear them while they are jogging. They stay on your face. They don't bounce. They are excellently made. I cannot recommend Gooder enough.
And Casey, they're pretty cool. In fact, you and I got a couple pairs.
Oh, yeah. What did you get?
Mine are called Hellhound Hallucinations.
Ooh, Alex. I got The Future is Void.
Amazing.
Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar, that's the name of our sunglasses.
Yes.
Not our new catchphrases for Completely Arbitrary.
Hey, man, you know what I say. Hellhound Hallucinations.
Yeah, he does say that.
And if you want to support this show and try a pair of Gooder, they are giving Completely Arbitrary listeners free shipping. You can go to gooder.com/trees. That's GOODR.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. Gooder offers a 30-day money-back guarantee and 100% satisfaction. Again, that's gooder.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. We'll see you in the future.
Which is void.
And bright.
Yeah, you look good. You look good.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Casey, during the break, you and I inhaled some delicious pho.
That's right, we did. It was not only delicious, it was splendid.
Wow.
I couldn't think of the word I wanted.
I was going to say it was very satisfying.
Yeah, I was thinking nutritious.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Mecca Pho in Portland.
Ah, go to it.
If you have, or Mecca Restaurant, I think they're called. Pho, the official meal of Completely Arbitrary, I would say.
I think so, yeah. We should have an advertisement for pho.
Let's do it. Also, during the break, Case, I did a little Googling. I Googled Meyer Lemon, and then I saw that the Meyer Lemon, also known as, and then about four Chinese characters.
Yeah.
I copy and pasted those Chinese characters into Google.
Yep.
I got a translation. The bergamot, or bergamot, bergamot, possibly, orange.
Yes.
You told me.
Yeah.
Alex, you should say that on the podcast.
I did.
Here I am saying it.
I'm happy that you did.
Are we going to talk about it later, though?
No, we can talk about it. Well, yeah, we'll kind of talk about it just about, it'll come up again very soon.
Okay.
So, basically, what you've done is you, whenever you read about these things, like we do in the podcast here, we're talking about trees that have been, quote, discovered by somebody, right?
Right.
As I noted earlier, the Meyer Lemon had been cultivated for likely thousands of years, surely 1,000 years or maybe two, but very likely way more than that. I think there are some things that were going back 4,000 years, some even more than that in terms of the lemon being cultivated, which would also explain how it can be, you know, so many different varieties and kinds like this.
Yeah.
So that is the quintessential thing is that what you found is that everyone's like, well, yeah, technically, you know, it's named for this crazy guy that we've talked about just maybe once or twice named
Oscar Meyer.
Oscar Meyer. Named Frank Nicholas Meyer, Alex.
Oh, okay.
And Frank Nicholas Meyer, we've talked about once before because he found one thing that we find quite despicable and that we dislike him for greatly, the calorie pear.
Oh, yes. Now that name wrinkles a bell in my brain.
Sure does. So this guy, he was this really interesting character. He was a plant explorer he was from initially the Netherlands, and he moved over from Europe after wandering around for a really long time, which is a really interesting, it's kind of, I was reading about him, and I was a little bit sad, because I was like, man, this guy really has kind of got himself, he was a little bit sad. He was a wanderer, is the best way to describe it, which works out well if you're trying to do plant exploration, right?
I will say, this guy looks like a fucking hipster.
Yeah, he kind of has that mustache.
And this beard.
Gorgeous.
And he just looks like, in his hat and his clothes.
Like, kind of oversized, but it's like, you don't need the coat that big.
Yeah, he's going thrifting.
Yeah, he totally is. And that's the song that he was like, he's listening to on his stenoscope or stenophone while he's just in his cabin. timeless Macklemore.
Oh, that song.
Yeah, that's the thrift shop.
What song?
Oh, sorry. I thought that's your reference.
No, he just looks like he's going thrifting.
Yeah, right. And honestly, he's a thrifty guy. You got to be thrifty if you're trying to travel the world like this. In fact,
right.
He's so thrifty. I saw, I just give him a quick Google. And in fact, you can actually find a history of Frank Meyer, like a couple quick blurbs from the USDA Forest, or not, geez, I always say Forest Service at the end of that. Not that. This is the OG USDA, the Department of Agriculture.
Okay.
So they hired him when he came back because he had wandered through Europe for a long time. And in fact, here's a quote. He said, "I am pessimistic by nature and have not found a road which leads to relaxation. I withdraw from humanity and try to find relaxation with plants. I live now in expectation of what will come." That was in 1901.
Lord, this guy was depressed.
He totally was depressed. Like, there's another. So on this, the USDA website, they kind of give his a little quick blurb. He's like, oh, well, he was a plant explorer and all these things. He moved from the Netherlands and blah, 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 blah. And then so in the bottom of this, there's a little thing that says proposal. And it's his proposal for his last expedition where he sends it to his boss by a guy by the name of Fairchild. And so he said, hey, here's, I want to go to South China and I want to explore, you know, whatever they have there. And then underneath, they have a bunch of other like little quotes and how much he said that he's going to propose. I need you to give to me. So he's very thrifty. He was going to go for an entire year to explore southern China on a budget of $6,000.
Wow.
That's it.
I was expecting a lot less, I think, because I was like, what would be so ridiculously low? Like $24.
Yeah. Well, this is in 1916, $17.
Wow.
Yeah. And but then, so interestingly, they have also a bunch of different quotes from him and just from all the things that he wrote. And so one of them, this is from the 3rd of February, 1917. "The loneliness of life, the great amount of work I have to do, which I can never finish, the paralyzing effect of this never-ending horrible war, and so many other things. These often rob me of my sleep and make me feel like a ship adrift."
Yeah, man, I feel that.
Yeah, I was reading through this and I was like, dude, this guy, he had some demons. Like, he just was discontented and unhappy.
Yeah.
So depression, I think, is the best word for poor Frank Meyer.
He sounds like a very real person.
Yes, he totally does. Like, reading through this, it's not like, oh, the historical journals of, you know, Lewis and Clark, where they're always like, we found this place, it's great, there's resources galore, the people will be happy.
This guy is just like, life is pain.
Yeah.
I might as well hang out in the woods.
Yeah, I'm just going to look at these lemons and squeeze them in my eye.
But even there, I find no joy.
Yeah, right? So we'll have links to this posted, but please read through some of these things. It's very sad. But he is he's a great guy. He went on four, I think, expeditions in the early 1900s for the USDA Forest Service.
Four different ones?
I think four, yeah.
Okay.
And he ended up going around, finding all these things. So he found this this lemon that we then named after him.
Mm-hmm.
We then learned that, okay, it's the Meyer's lemon, but it's a hybrid apparently between the citron and the pomelo and all these things. So we were able to kind of figure this out later. But it just so happens that as he was looking around and like the Wikipedia articles talking about this, they have a whole other section. This says also this was probably in cultivation for a long time, and here's the name of it in Chinese because it was in China they found it. So it, like, that's where you bringing this up, like those Chinese characters. Essentially, he was not in the strict sense a colonialist, but he was there trying to find things that were already in existence, already crops, already well used by the people of this area, and then bringing it over to the United States so that we could use that to our advantage.
It sounds a bit, maybe this is just plant exploring 101, but it sounds a bit like the person who, I'm putting this in air quotes, discovered the Don Redwood.
Yeah, kind of.
Sort of have a similar trajectory?
Yeah, they were around looking, I think so. Gosh, I wish I could remember who that was that's been so long ago now. Oh, my God.
We talked about it, I think, in our Don Redwood episode.
Yeah, I think we did. Yeah, I think, well, that's a bummer. I can't remember. Anyway.
No biggie.
So, ended up being that he Went out there and was he found like alfalfa and like a bunch of other kinds of sorghum. They were trying to find varieties that could grow in the western United States, like all these different kinds of varieties of already well-known plants so that we could then plant them over here and then, you know, add them to the market, right?
I see.
So, you know, I don't think there was any like stealing going on necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, that's a gray area.
It is, yeah. I think he would say, hey, can I have these? And they're like, sure, you can take them.
Sure.
The only thing actually he could not get was poppy seeds, where he also has another quote. It says, you probably know that poppy cultivation has been totally prohibited in all China, and that poppy seed, this is in italics, poppy seed is absolute contraband for which farmers have been beheaded who had it in their possession.
Wow.
So someone's like, hey, could you go get some poppy seed?
Yeah.
And everyone's like, he's like, you should know, of course I cannot get poppy seed.
Not worth it.
Yeah. So anyway, as it turns out, the poor guy ended up falling off a boat under auspicious circumstances.
Was this in the Amazon or the Nile or something?
No, this is in the Yangtze River in China.
Didn't somebody else die on a boat?
Oh,
another
probably.
Plant explorer?
I feel like this might have been the guy.
I think all these people are the same person. They reincarnated.
Either they die in a pit trap, they die on a, you know, off of some mountainside, or they just completely disappear in a river.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I think maybe it was this guy. We talked about somebody at one point who died of curious circumstances on a boat. So yes, it must have been Frank
Meyer. It must have been, yeah. So poor Frank Meyer had a difficult life, died a sad death that no one was, you know, there's no fanfare for him. So
it's
another sad one. But that's okay because he introduced like, I think, 23,000 species or 2,300.
I'll say this. Good thing this fucking thing is named after him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
he deserved it.
He does. He absolutely deserves it. So he's, I mean, he brought in a bunch of different species that we still grow today, which are incredible.
Imagine if a colleague was like, hey, thanks, Frank, for finding this. Definitely we're going to name it after you. And then Frank walks away, dies, and the colleague is like, maybe I'll name it after myself.
Yeah, I'm going to name it after my girlfriend. She's way hotter.
Maybe I'll finally get laid.
Ah, poor Frank. Well, the good news is, as we said earlier, and I wanted to make sure to circle back to, Alex, this tree, this plant, this fruit was known to everybody else way before.
Of course. So all things are. That is the right? Motto of this podcast.
All things were known. Yeah. So this, luckily, was known way before his time. Specifically, it was traded like through Persia, and initially, they think, from the Southeast Himalayas. That's where like OG citrus is from, or like at least the citrone, I believe.
They would be like trading the tree or the fruits?
I think
or both.
Maybe the seeds.
Seeds.
Yeah.
Those are more shelf stable.
Yeah, exactly. Because these, they will stay green and just start to rot right on the tree.
Yeah.
Unless you pick them and eat them like when they're absolutely ripe.
Oh, they'll rot on the tree. I guess all fruits would.
Exactly. Well, some don't. Some like would harden and then fall off the tree when they're mature.
I see.
But this, specifically the lemons and the citrus grater, they will just stay on the tree and just kind of wither away.
So probably best to sell seeds.
Exactly.
That's an investment though, man.
It really is. You gotta wait, you gotta plant it, you gotta let it become a big thing, and then you gotta hope that your soil and climate are right. Yeah.
You gotta stay in one place.
Yeah. That sucks.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of these people were farmers though, so maybe they didn't have to worry about that.
That's fair.
Yeah. Well, either way. Made it all the way to Rome, made it over into North Africa. It was up in the Mediterranean.
Wow.
It was over in all the way down through the Southeast Asian islands, and like went with the Australasian people, which are from initially Taiwan, and then kind of moved down to everywhere except Australia.
Huh.
Got almost everywhere else. And this is like, there's been multiple different migrations like this, but this is one of them. They even went all the way out to Hawaii because they were the first peoples that invented like big seafaring boats and things.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Catamarans, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So this is the classic, like, you know, Oceania kind of exploration and migrations.
Cool.
So the lime and the lemon and whatever you want to call it got moved all over this area, grew really great. And then people would trade it like overseas every now and then, right?
Mm.
People started noticing, man, scurvy sucks.
Sure.
You've heard of scurvy, right, Alex?
Yeah, you know what's funny? I know I have like, I feel like a great familiarity with the word scurvy, and I know it's like a seafaring disease, and it's tied to pirates. But I actually don't. I guess it's a deficiency, right?
Yeah.
Vitamin C.
Vitamin C deficiency.
Oh, wow. It fucks up your gums.
It does a lot of bad stuff.
Oh, my God. You're going to lose your teeth on scurvy. Well, let's talk about scurvy. All right. So, unfortunately.
So scurvy is a pretty rough disease, and it is, at the time, no one really knew what it is. I know what you're looking at.
Can I just say,
I have an idea.
I would, anybody who has an interest in Googling, Google image searching scurvy,
don't.
I took that bullet for you. I can tell you it's not worth it. Don't do it.
It's rough.
It's gruesome.
Yeah, it's really bad.
It's really bad.
Yeah,
oh,
and people
God.
Just die really quickly. And essentially what's happening is the deficiency of vitamin C makes it so that you can't grow, I think, collagen anymore.
Oh.
So your cells just start to either die or they can't repair themselves and you can't make new ones. So your body just doesn't rot necessarily. Oh. It's just like you can't rebuild what you lose or fix what's damaged.
That's like a zombie disease.
It is, yeah. And that's why your gums, it's not your teeth, it's just your gums. It's those cells.
Mm.
And you get like sores and wounds and all these things, and then you end up dying because it's also all of your internal organs and things.
I hope I didn't offend anybody who I'm sorry for saying that it was a zombie disease. Somebody out there might be close to someone who had scurvy, and it
that
was
is
awful.
True. Yeah, it's not good.
I didn't mean to minimize it by calling it the zombie disease.
Well, that's true, Alex. And so
yikes.
Hopefully no one has it, because it turns out it is eminently treatable.
That's right.
And guess who figured this out for the first time?
Ooh.
Our second interesting character of this show.
Oh.
One man named James Lind.
James Lind.
That's right.
He
that's
sounds
the guy.
Like an explorer. Was he an explorer?
Yeah, he was, actually. He was a little bit of an explorer, though. He wasn't so much of a classical explorer. He was actually a physician and was a Scottish physician. I think he was in Edinburgh, and then ended up getting on a couple different boats. And what's famous about him is that he technically, I believe they give him credit for conducting the first ever clinical trial.
Oh, wow.
And I think you might have read this one time when we were kind of doing research about this.
Yeah.
But essentially, he was on a boat and he was making all these observations. One observation was that they would get sick. And of course, there's an article that we have linked here, and it's on the BBC. And if you look at it, they give a little bit of a description of what they were calling scurvy.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that it's a luxuriance of fungus flesh, putrid gums, and the most dreadful terrors.
Fuck.
Yeah, it's awful. And so
will you read that one more time?
I will. Hold on. Put the music on.
Go.
Luxuriance of fungus flesh, putrid gums, and the most dreadful terrors.
That was even better with the music.
Yeah, but this is what it is. Apparently, there was one instance. I shouldn't laugh. It's just kind of like, oh, man, that's crazy. That there was a British expedition that went to go just raid a bunch of Spanish holdings, and they lost 1,300 of their 2,000 men to scurvy.
Before they got there?
Before they even got there.
Oh, my God. Is scurvy contagious? Surely no.
No, it's not contagious. It just happens because humans, along with, I think, guinea pigs and some apes or monkeys, one of the two, they cannot create their own vitamin C just in their own bodies. So rats, almost every other animal will create, synthesize their own vitamin C within their body.
So they're on this sea journey. They're eating hardtack the whole time.
Yeah.
And shitting in buckets.
Ale, you know, things like that.
They all weren't getting enough vitamin C.
They weren't getting any vitamin C. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So then they just get this. Their bodies literally start falling apart. They start to die. Mm. It gets really awful. So this guy, James Lind, is like, okay, we gotta get this figured out. And I'm gonna conduct this thing. I'm gonna figure it out. Here's what I'm gonna suggest. You're gonna take 12 different men, all similar symptoms of scurvy, and he divided them into six pairs and treated them with the following: a quart of cider a day.
Okay.
And this would probably be alcoholic cider, to be clear.
Yeah, sure.
25 drops of elixir of vitriol, which is administered three times a day, and vitriol is a diluted solution of sulfuric acid. Then otherwise, the next one is half a pint of seawater a day.
You know, he was doing the best he could.
He's just trying. He's throwing something at the wall and seeing what would stick.
Oh my God.
A nutmeg size of paste of garlic, mustard seed, horseradish, balsam of Peru, and gum myrrh three times a day.
Okay.
The other two, a spoonful of vinegar three times a day, mm-hmm. or two oranges and one lemon a day.
The lucky winners.
By the end of the week, those who had the citrus fruit were well enough to even help nurse the others.
Amazing.
1 week, and they completely turned around because wow. they started getting this vitamin C that was in the citrus fruits.
So, what, you know, all of those treatments
yeah.
are so random.
Absolutely.
So the citrus was just at a random pick by yeah, this man?
That's it, essentially.
Do you reckon he had any hypothesis involved?
There had been a couple people before this that had kind of said, man, these lemons are like really, they're good. Like,
they give me a zing in my...
They're kind of this.
Yeah.
But it's essentially food as medicine, Alex. Mm-hmm. So, like we've talked about a bunch of different times, right? This is just some weird fruit that has this weird zingy taste that we didn't even really know what acid was at the time.
Sure.
But it had this weird, like, very, very in-your-face zing. So you'd eat it, and you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
Kind of get woken up.
That's right.
And then apparently, so he's like, okay, this must have some medicinal properties. Let's just give it to him and see what happens.
Because you were saying, I think on our nutmeg episode, that... When humans try a food
mm-hmm.
that is in any way like has an extreme flavor or
yeah.
some property that catches their senses,
mm-hmm.
that is sort of like a sign that we've developed to denote something that could be used medicinally.
Yeah, exactly.
So of course, citrus is like. I mean, it's like a shot in the arm. Citrus yeah. is so, so good, and it like really wakes you up and makes you feel really good.
It does, right?
Unless you're allergic to it, then
yeah,
it kills
in which
you.
Case, sorry, don't eat it.
It gives you scurvy.
It
That's
turns
the
out
weird
that,
part.
Whoa!
Yeah.
You're exactly right. And keep in mind that this is like, you know, in the 1700s, I think he did this in like 1747 is when he did this.
Okay.
So, but this is at a time when the level of knowledge in terms of certainly the Western knowledge of like what is causing these things and like how the body works was so poor that they said, well, what is scurvy and where do these things happen? They used to say you should take, and this is all from this article that we were going to have posted. He said they would do some bloodletting and apply a piece of turf to the patient's mouth in order to counter the, quote, bad qualities of sea air. So this is, you got to play it all by some level here. So him choosing citrus is about as random as taking some turf, literal grass,
yeah.
rubbing it on your mouth to try to counteract the sea air because the turf is on the ground.
You know,
he was trying his best.
He was trying his best. They were on the right track. I mean, thank God they included that fucking citrus in that.
Right. And then the other option would be, yeah. you know, it was in all of these islands and it had been brought back from these islands from the Portuguese and the Spanish
oh, sure.
explorer. So it might have been like, well, these seafaring people don't get scurvy because they live on these islands. They have these fruit. Okay. It must be that these fruit help with this thing because they don't have it.
Casey,
coincidence and maybe
I think you're onto something. I'm looking at a 1757 paper
yeah.
written by James Lind.
Yeah,
can I read the title of this thing?
Oh, you may.
Do you see that too?
I think so.
A treatise on the scurvy in three parts, containing an inquiry into the nature, causes, and cure of that disease, together with a critical and chronological view of what has been published on the subject, by James Lind, M.D.
By James Lind.
Fellow of the Royal College of Physicians in Edinburgh.
There he is. That's
a
move.
Yeah, so he wrote a paper on how to treat scurvy. Short yeah. paper?
A very short paper. Actually, I think it was like 250 pages.
Oh, wow.
And of it, it took like a couple pages where he talked about the cure. And
yeah.
then 250 other pages of other kind of treatment ideas.
Yeah, that yeah. makes... That makes...
He didn't make as good of a conclusion as he maybe should have.
But, oh well. James, it was right in front of you, my guy.
But then over the years...
God bless him.
Over the years, everyone finally said, oh, shoot, this really works. And then they would start literally just shipping them around as much as they could. They became super important. People would grow them way up in the north of Europe because it was a fancy thing to have an orangey, is what they called it. And so they'd grow citrus in like these glass houses that they would keep warm and everything. So it got pretty wild up there, that's for sure.
I will say, this is anecdotal, before we get into our review, this is anecdotal.
Yeah.
But last winter, I became kind of obsessed with eating different citrus.
Yeah.
And I live across the street from a nice market, and I would go every single day and get a different, either a navel orange, which I think is just my favorite.
They're so good.
It's just such a classic.
It is.
Or another, some sort of mandarin or some sort of other orange or whatever. Okay.
Well, it's one of the seven mandarins.
That's right. There are about 30 species of citrus on that chart. And at one point, the entire top shelf of my fridge was stocked with oranges.
Delicious.
And twice a day, I'd crack open an orange. Casey, I felt great.
See, you know what? But there's also like the sugars and things. I mean, who knows? Maybe it could just be bring fruit from sunnier, warmer climes up to the cold climes, and then it makes you feel better, as if you're getting that vitamin D or something.
Sure.
I don't know.
Casey, with that, let's get into our review of the Meyer Lemon. Boy, oh boy, here's how it's going to go. We're going to give some final thoughts on this tree and then give it a rating of 0 to 10 Golden Poems of Honor.
Yes.
For season 4, completely arbitrary plant-based diet. Casey, as our resident expert, we'll begin with you.
All right, that sounds good. One thing I'm happy about with this.
How about this, Casey?
Oh, yes.
As our resident ship doctor.
Ah!
You're like Bones.
Yeah, that's right.
Or what? Crusher.
I don't know.
Dr. Crusher from Next Generation.
Yes, that sounds exactly right. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, Star Trek.
Star Trek. Oh, gosh. This is a tree that I think is, of all the medicinal trees, or all the trees that have these qualities, the pomegranate, everyone's like, oh, it's fertility. And it doesn't really do anything for fertility. It just maybe gets you a little turned on, get ready for some fertility action.
Sure.
The nutmeg, it gets you a little wild, you know, and you kind of feel like you're floating for a little bit, you know. Well, of all the trees that I think we've chosen so far, this is the one that truly has like some bona fides, you know.
For sure.
The lemon tree actually saves lives.
It sure does.
You give it out there, and of all the other kinds of citrus, it has one of the top most. For a while, the English were making people drink or eat limes, and they actually called their sailors limeys, apparently, for a long time. You remember this?
Yeah,
way back when you were a sailor.
I remember this, yeah.
So, it's cool. I think that the lemon itself has solved so many problems. I wish scurvy on nobody. Mm. I love that it's a pirate-themed thing. You know, it's kind of fun to be like, scurvy, and kind of make fun of it.
Yeah.
But then know that we had people like James Lind to save us from ourselves.
Yeah.
And we had people like Meyer to find it and spread it across the world because it was so gosh dang good.
Mm-hmm.
So the one problem is, as we say with all these things, it's not a tree, Alex. It doesn't grow really tall, you know?
What?
It's a little tree. It's a little tiny tree.
Is it a tree or not a tree?
It's a tree, but it's a little tiny tree. Right. And if we're going to say that they're all one big interbreeding population with just different things, like the Cucuba Pepo, pumpkins, gourds, they're all the same thing. It's the same species, just different varieties, just like the brassica. So, if I'm going to review one, I'm essentially reviewing them all. Isn't that right? Yeah. So, if I say, well, this is just one version of this citrus triangle.
So, okay.
Anything within that triangle could be anything within that triangle.
You're saying this episode is sort of like 30 episodes.
It's kind of like 30 episodes. So
we might have a break coming up.
We're going to have a big break, approximately 3/4 of a year.
Yeah.
Because right now we're reviewing every citrus there is.
How about that, folks? That's value for money.
That's value for money.
This is a free podcast.
I So I think I'm gonna try and focus it on the lemon itself.
Okay.
I think it's delicious. I like squirting it. I like making lemonade. I like finding them when I go down to California and being like, oh my gosh, I can do this right now. I can like make something with this immediately.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome. I like that it is a really beautiful tree. I love that it saves lives. And I think it's just such a unique little thing to have that it grows fruit all year round. You can just walk outside in the middle of January if you're in, I don't know, Southern California and be like, lime tree.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. I think that's really fun. So I think for this one, I think I'm going to go with like, I mean, okay, so I'm trying to compare. I'm like, what did I give mango? mango, I mean, it's got those ornery seeds, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, you know, this doesn't. You can take these seeds anywhere, grow them anywhere. I'm going to give it 7.6.
7.6?
7.6 for the lemon tree, the Meyer lemon tree, citrus cross Meyer, or citrus cross, you know, anything you want.
All right. Not a bad score.
Not a bad score, but a delicious drink.
7.6 Golden Poems of Honor. Good job, Case. The Meyer lemon. I love the appearance, as I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful tree. Great color scheme. It's got that going for it. That's one. Two, Frank Meyer. Hilariously sad character. God bless him. Wherever you are, Frank, I'm thinking about you. I feel very connected to Frank Meyer in a way. when you were reading his diary, isn't that fucked up of us?
Yeah, he doesn't mind. These are letters that he sent over to different things.
Okay. Especially that he's writing in like formal letters to his employee, yeah. His employers. Like,
I'm really sad.
Life
Frank.
Is pointless.
Yeah. Hey, just make sure you bring back those seeds, Frank. Really appreciate it. Yeah.
Sorry, I can't come into work today. I'm really depressed.
I'm looking at the side of a boat.
I love that. I love that guy. Unless he was a secretive monster. I don't love him.
Let's just assume not.
I would love to. And then we got James Lind. Over here, changing history.
Yep.
Like, what a small discovery with such huge ramifications.
Amazing,
yeah.
Right?
Just like, hey, eat an orange. Oh, my God, I am cured. Amazing. You know, way to go. And then, as far as the food itself, I eat, on average, I would say, almost a lemon a day, Casey.
Really? That many?
I put it in my water. I put it in my ice water.
Oh, yeah.
It cleans out your systems and kind of flushes what's the stagnant. I don't know any of this is true, but I believe that it does this.
Yeah.
I always feel better when I eat something with lemon.
I think there's a thing to it. I mean,
James Lind certainly thinks so.
Right? You get extra vitamin C, you can get yourself, you feel better because you're actively supporting the rebuilding of your body.
Yeah. There you have it. Citrus, in general, gets a 10 out of 10.
Ooh.
It's one of my favorite food categories.
Oh, my God. I didn't know it was that high. I guess I should have. Your whole shelf was covered.
That's
okay.
Right.
All right. All right.
I'm giving the Meyer Lemon a 9.1.
9.1?
Golden Poems of Honor.
Wow. I feel so low. This has been such a good season for you because you're just such a food fan where you're just like, nope, this is amazing and delicious. And you know what? Those colors are beautiful. 9.1.
Yeah, and they're not overplanted.
You know what? This one, I agree, Alex. Not overplanted.
That's right. Hell yeah, man.
That is a stunningly good review. I think that's perfectly. That's spot on.
Thanks, Case.
Yeah, except for I gave it a little bit less because you know.
Your poems are your own.
Hey, that's right,
Casey. That was our review of the Meyer Lemon. You know who else likes the Meyer Lemon? A returning guest chef, Spencer Huey, out of San Francisco, friend of the pod, I would call him. Spencer sent us, I'll say, a mouth-watering recipe.
Yeah, that's fair to say.
The pictures are insane. Go look at those on our Instagram. Crispy chicken thighs with Meyer lemon salsa verde. Here's what Spencer has to say.
Hello, Casey, Alex, and listeners of Completely Arbitrary. This is Spencer, and I am from the San Francisco Bay Area. I work as a cook at a restaurant called Chez Panisse in Berkeley, and I love the Meyer lemon. It is just an amazing plant. Its fruit is extremely fragrant and flavorful. The zest is incredible. The juice is so flavorful and acidic. but also a little bit sweet. And you can use the whole thing as well. A lot of people in the Bay Area, myself included, have citrus plants, but especially Meyer lemon trees all around. And so today I have a recipe that I'm calling crispy chicken thighs with Meyer lemon salsa. And it is an amazing dish. We cook versions of this at the restaurant. And so I kind of adapted a recipe for home cooking. I make this all the time. If I had to choose one way to cook chicken, this would be it. Basically, the chicken is deboned. It's a thigh. And it's cooked low and slow. And the fat renders out, becomes like crispy and juicy and flavorful. The skin becomes nice and golden brown and crunchy as well. And then you top it with a Meyer lemon salsa verde. This salsa verde is not the Mexican type of salsa verde. This is an Italian herb sauce highlighting Meyer lemons. And so essentially, you take Meyer lemons, and we're going to use a zest of one. And the other one you take, you make a Meyer lemon bits, and you cut it lengthwise. You kind of cut out the fruit part, and you slice the skin and the pith, the zest and the pith together into fine slices. You turn them around 90 degrees, and you chop them into finely little diced bits. So you take the zest and you take the bits, you mix them with some chopped parsley, grated garlic, finely chopped capers, a little bit of anchovy and salt. You mix it all together, you cover it with olive oil, and at the end, you put some red wine vinegar in there. And so you mix the sauce together. It is briny from the capers and anchovies. It is zesty and acidic from the vinegar and the lemons, and herby from the parsley. Sauce is extremely flavorful. It's slightly salty and really bright with the acid. It goes well on everything. Anything from meats like this chicken or pork or beef to eggs to grilled vegetables to bread or pasta, whatever you want. It's a really fantastic salsa to make and to put on different things. You can mix it up as well. So I love this recipe. I love this chicken. I love the Meyer lemon salsa. I think it's a great way to highlight the Meyer lemon. And it's a really easy recipe to cook. Another bonus recipe, I don't know if I'd call it a recipe, it's more of a technique that I do with Meyer lemons, is preserve lemons. And the preserve lemons come from North African cooking. And what you do is you take a bunch of lemons and you quarter them lengthwise, and you leave them a little touched at the end. And you open up the lemon, you throw some salt in there, and you take the lemons and you pack them in a jar, kind of squish them all down, and you keep packing with salt and lemons until the jar fills up and the lemons are kind of occupying all the space and all the lemon juices kind of come out and it's surrounded by salt. And so that salt kind of preserves the lemon. As long as everything's covered, put a jar on loosely and leave it on your countertop to kind of ferment for 3 to 4 weeks, and then I'll move it to the fridge. But preserved lemons are fantastic, and basically use them anywhere you would use salt. So you take the lemon out, or the piece of lemon out, you remove the fruit, and you're actually going to use the skin, rinse it under water, let it soak if it's a little too salty. Cut them in little cubes and fine dice and put them on, you know, mix them in the salsa, mix them in salads, put them on meat. They're fantastic and really, really delicious. So there's two things you can do with Meyer lemons. Remember, guys, that food brings people together, as does this podcast. So I wish you guys the best and take care.
Casey!
That guy is so sweet, Alex.
He's a sweetheart. That was the nicest thing anybody's ever said about this podcast, certainly.
Yeah, I'm glad that it brings people together, and I agree that food does as well, which is half the reason we wanted to do this, because there's so much great information about the trees and how they've pulled together entire cultures around them.
For sure. I mean, what's more communal than sitting around a table sharing food?
That's, yeah, exactly.
That's
talking
as
about trees.
Good as it gets, man. Oh. That's as good as it gets.
Thanks.
For me.
I had to jam that in there. It does get good. Oh, my God. Well, thank you so very much for that recipe.
Yeah.
That was just incredible.
Thank you, Spencer. I this recipe, I'm not kidding, looks incredible. I say this all the time, but I must make it. It also is really, really simple. I think probably anybody
can
make
like
this
it.
Thing.
I'm curious about that preservation of lemons. That's really fun.
It sounds
great. It's like, yeah, just jam them in there with salt. Call it good.
Leave it on the counter for 4 weeks. James Lind approved. Thanks, Spence. Casey.
Yes.
It's time for a completely arbitrary Q&A.
That sounds good to me.
This week, our question is from Cole Simonson.
Okay.
Cole says, Why do some pine diseases only affect trees with a specific number of needles per fascicle? Mm. For example, White Pine Blister Rust, which is my new favorite punk band, only affects those with five needle fascicles.
Pine Blister Rust.
And to expand on that, what are the differences between pines with two, three, four, five needles? Is it only morphological? This has been a burning question for some time. Thanks, Casey and Alex. Love your show. Your humble fungal associate, Cole. Cole, thank you.
Thank you, Cole.
Case, isn't it true that all needle, and I'm not being, this is not a, I'm not being, this isn't like a Buddhist thing to say.
Okay, yeah.
That all needles start as one?
Ugh, dude, Alex, thank you so much for saying that.
And then they split off when they, the, you know, when the tree decides what they should be, when the DNA decides what they should be.
That is essentially correct. Yeah.
Because if you pull, if say you come across a five needle pine.
Yeah.
For instance, just off the top of my head, a five needle pine, like maybe the Jeffrey.
Western white.
Like the Western white pine, for instance. just one of the many five needle pines I know. If you take all five needles and kind of squish them together with your fingers, they sort of form on the outside, sort of form a circle.
Yeah.
Like they come together naturally.
Exactly. As if they're split like the little wedges on a game of Trivial Pursuit.
How about they're split like a diced up, a cut up lemon.
Exactly. But that you like leave the connected at the very bottom and they're covered with salt.
Yeah, yummy.
You got it right. That's exactly it. That is it. That's a four needle pine, though, I think, technically, if you quarter the lemon. The reason that that's different is that they are genetically similar and they're in subfamilies. So there's a couple different subfamilies in Pinus. So there's the subgenus Pinus, the subgenus Strobus. Those are like the two big ones. Okay. And then those are further broken down into smaller groups. So like, for instance, the pinyon pines and the, what they call the hard pines and like things like that. So like, for instance, under the subgenus Pinus, there is attenuate, and that has the fire adapted closed cone pines of California and neighboring areas. Pinus attenuata, the knob cone pine, muricata, which is the bishop pine, and then radiata, which is the Monterey pine.
Sometimes when you talk about this stuff, it sounds like you're talking about Game of Thrones and the different houses.
Ah, yes. This is House Attenuata.
Of the south, of the Southern California coast.
North of the bay, there's Pinus Radiata. Mm-hmm. Where they meet, they battle.
Their sigil is a fire-adapted cone.
Exactly, just with a fire behind it. That'd be so cool. We should make a bunch of sigils of pine cone families.
Hey, didn't we have this idea at one point?
Maybe, but let's do it again.
Let's do it.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, so when you look back on these subgenre, they're essentially what's called a clade. And a clade is a fully connected branch of a family tree, so to speak. So as you are looking from all the different species, you want to put the ones that are really closely related right next to each other, and then those are connected, you know, on that family tree. They're just two branches at the base. Mm. Then there's another one that's related to those in some way, and you just kind of follow those branches all the way up until they become bigger and bigger branches.
Okay.
Where if you clip that branch, wherever you clip it, you could have 2, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, all the different things. So if you go to Pinus, you clip that branch, you have every single pine tree at the end of all the twigs at the end of that branch.
Yeah.
Of the family tree of life, right?
Yes.
So then if you go down, those are all going to be split into clades, and a clade would be one continuous branch. So at some point way back when, the five needle pines and their ilk, they separated genetically off. So they're not necessarily so different to where they are not a pine tree. They're just a different kind of pine tree. So we decided, okay, they're so closely related that they can be in one genus. However, they're not so closely related that they all get the same diseases because they've genetically split way, way long ago. Not enough to be, let's say, the Pinus this, and then Strobus this, as in Strobus is the genus. Does that make sense? Okay, so there's still these subfamilies. Essentially, quick answer to the question, we'll start from there, is that they are genetically different and they've separated such a long time ago that the diseases, and they've developed different woods, different structures, different everything. They're not so different that they are like unrelated entirely. Mm-hmm. They're still really, really closely related, but they're so far away, it's like you're the cousin of your great-great-grandma, and she... her sister had a bunch of kids. Those kids had kids. Those kids had kids. And now you have like this, you're not even remotely closely related to those other kids.
Right.
But if you go back just three generations, you literally came from the same parents.
You're technically related, but you're so far apart, it feels as though you're not related.
Yes, exactly. And so that's how it is with the five needle pines and the three needle pines and the two needle pines and then the pinyon pines that are somewhere in between.
Oh, so... Okay, I think I just connected a dot.
Ooh, what is it? Okay.
I think I finally understand what you're saying.
Okay.
That like two and three, four, five needle pines mm-hmm. are less related to each other than two needle pines are related to two needle pines.
Yes, exactly.
Interesting.
So the one that I just used, Pinus attenuata, maricata, and radiata,
uh-huh.
those all have three needles.
Oh. And
they all have cones that are really similar. So they are one subsection. So they are really closely related. There's a bunch of subsections that are underneath a certain section that are underneath a certain subgenus.
Hmm.
Those two subgenuses are kind of the two and three needle pine and then the five needle pines.
Okay, so the diseases, that's why the diseases may not affect two needle pines the same way that affect five needle pines.
Yes, exactly.
Because all two needle pines are extremely closely related.
Yeah, and they have some weird genetic thing that is, or that they're just resistant to it, and maybe the white pine blister rust, it is really good, or maybe it had developed when there was only one five needle pine, like way back when that first split off. Then that disease was like, all right, cool, I'm going to get in you because you had this one mutation that caused you to have five needles, and then you became wildly successful, but you still had that same genetic mutation that this one disease could take advantage of.
Interesting.
So then that would happen. There's like... blue stain fungus generally only affects the two needle pines. So that would have the scotch pine and let's say the lodgepole pine.
Mm.
Those are affected by blue stain fungus, but the five needle pines are not.
Interesting.
And then this, of course, goes up as you go up this level of diversity. And now we say, well, spruces and pines and Douglas fir are really closely related, but they do not share always the same fungal associates. So the, let's say, Ganoderma, that fungus, it would only get into certain ones of these genus. They wouldn't get into all of the everything in the pine family.
Okay.
So it's basically, the quick answer is they're just separated enough that some have resistance as a group because that group split off from the other group a long time ago, then split into a bunch of other individual trees that all carried that same genetic resistance with them down from that initial split. And then as you go up further and further, you get that more and more until you have this wild diversity between, you know, true cedars not having any sort of resist or any sort of decay pathogens that really get in, and then the true firs that have a ridiculous amount that get in all the time.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Wow.
That is the kind of quick answer, I guess.
Shit. Well,
anyway.
It was extremely comprehensive.
Here's my PowerPoint presentation that I wrote up for this. No, yeah, it gets, once it gets down to anything else, like you could look into, you know, how is the wood, you know, working? And this tree has a certain number of this or that happens. But that, I don't have all the answers for that, unfortunately. Just cool. The fact that it has something that makes it resistant to certain things, susceptible to other things, and it's closely related, but not too closely related cousins, also do or don't have those things.
There you have it. Thank you so much, Cole, for your question. It really put a nickel in you, as I say.
Yeah, that is true.
It was interesting. That's I learned something new today.
Well,
hey,
there you are.
If you have a question for Casey about trees, email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com. That's ArbitrarayArry. Follow us on Instagram @arbitrarypod. Or you can support this little old podcast, patreon.com/arbitrarypod. You can join the Arboretum for two bonus episodes a month. about trees and other related topics, or you can join the Cone of the Month Club that we talked about at the top of the show, so I won't do it again. Casey!
Yes, sir?
Can I propose a sort of a metaphorical toast? We don't have any lemonade here.
Yes, that sounds great.
I think we should toast to Frank Meyer.
I think we should, Alec. That's a great idea.
And we might as well toast, maybe a separate toast so that it doesn't diminish it, to our boy James Lynn.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. I think both of those two, they deserve it. They did good work and they sacrificed for it.
Yeah.
Those poor sailors. Whoever got the arsenic. Can we cheers for them too?
Yeah. Here's to the sailors.
Here's to the sailors. Here's to James Lind and, of course, our beloved Mr. Meyer.
Actually, I don't want to cheers to the sailors because they were on a nefarious mission.
Yeah, well, I guess they're true. They were soldiers just getting paid. Yeah, all right, that's fair.
Well, all right.
It's really the system that failed them. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
An opposite cheers to the system. And a cheers to you for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.
Yes, Mr. Fairchild, it often seems that we do not live ourselves any longer, but that we are being lived. Uncontrollable forces seem to be at work among humanity, and final results, or possibly purposes, are not being revealed as yet, that is, for so far as I can look into this whole Titanic cataclysm. Frank Meyer, May 18, 1918.